One of my top lessons is that it's a marathon and not a sprint. Change takes time, and we need to be prepared to shift our approaches, and we need funders who are willing to allow that time.
A good chunk of our process was listening to our community. We didn't just crunch quantitative data and spit it out into a report.
The pandemic has brought a lot of pain points to the forefront. And so there is a tendency to try to do things quicker and maybe not to the scale that you would want to do. Stick to your guns and do it right.
Hello, and welcome to the Richmond Fed's Rural Spotlight Series. We use Rural Spotlights to showcase how rural communities across the 5th District are addressing the challenges they face. We hope that you gained inspiration and insight from the lessons learned discussed in today's conversation.
My name is Matt Wells, and I'm a senior economics writer in the research department here at the Richmond Fed. Today I am joined by Patrick Miller, Assistant Director of the NC East Alliance, a regional economic development organization representing 29 counties in eastern North Carolina. This year, NC East Alliance started an ambitious new initiative, the Industry in Schools Strategy, which aims to transform regional rural STEM education through a new K-12 teacher training and education program. Patrick, could you please describe for us the work of the Alliance and why it was created and what some of the specific challenges are that its work is meant to address?
Sure. So NC East Alliance, which is the parent company of STEM East, is a regional economic development organization that looks to recruit business. STEM East was created probably about 13 years ago, somewhere around 2010, to focus on enhancing STEM education so that kids would be more prepared for post-secondary opportunities, whether it was community college or a four-year program or directly into the workforce. The focus of STEM East has changed post-COVID to creating and sustaining a workforce within eastern North Carolina, within our 29-county region. We are looking to stop exporting our greatest natural resource, that being our children. Our best and brightest leave often go to the Triangle or beyond and never come back east, even though there are lots of opportunities in the region for jobs that require an industry-recognized credential or a associate's degree. In talking with community college presidents, we've figured out about 75 or 80% of the jobs only require that credential or associate's degree. There are plenty of jobs in this area across lots and lots of different industries that pay a salary that is greater than the median average income for this region straight out of high school. And a lot of kids don't know that. We've heard in the news all this about college debt. We can get kids in these jobs with little to no debt by using the Career and College Promise program while they're in high school. And then if they don't finish the credential or the associate degree, it's very inexpensive to finish it up right out of high school. Most of these companies would be willing to go ahead and hire these individuals while they're finishing up because they desperately need workers. If we're not able to provide workers in this region, some of these companies may have to consider moving elsewhere, and that would be terrible.
I mentioned up top the industry and schools strategy. Can you explain what it is that strategy is meant to accomplish?
The big part of our work is bringing an awareness of those opportunities, the pathways into those jobs, and making sure students and teachers have access to this information so that they can make an informed decision. What we want to do is partner with industry to bring about a greater awareness of the jobs in a particular industry cluster, whether it's healthcare, whether it's aviation and aerospace or smart ag or advanced manufacturing. There are lots of jobs in those fields.
Can you describe what the Industry in Schools program looks like in operation?
Looking at our region from an industrial standpoint, you can see very clearly that each subregion, if you will, has an industry cluster that stands out. For instance, there's a biopharma crescent in the Greenville, Rocky Mount area. There's an aviation corridor from Wayne County, Lenoir County to Carteret County, and some of that extends into the Elizabeth City area. Of course, the healthcare cluster carries the whole 29-county region, which also mirrors the ECU Health Service area. And so we're looking at the industry clusters and thinking about a 60-mile or 60-minute radius from those companies. What school districts does that touch? And do the students and teachers know what's in that big box building that I drive by every day? If they do, do they know the array of jobs that are available in that building and what type of salaries and education those jobs need? Also working with industry to come into the schools and partner with us. If one of the industries uses CNC machines, is there some inexpensive piece of equipment that they can bring into the school and work with the teacher to create a module that might mimic something that a real professional would do in that building that could get a student hooked so that in high school they can start a pathway that would lead to whatever credential or associate degree or whatever credentials needed to take that job and stay in this area.
So then what's the role of the K through 12 educator in this process?
So we are focusing on the teachers as a workforce, if you will. If we start with teachers and building the awareness of the jobs in this region, they can do a better job than we can sharing those opportunities and building that awareness in their students. They can start in elementary school with exploring what those opportunities are in middle school. They can engage with some of those STEM centers with the modules that I described earlier. And then we hope that in high school, they'll start working with the community colleges in a pathway that would lead to that credential. So in essence, they would experience that career while they're in high school.
So the teachers are sort of a conduit or connector or sharer of knowledge. How are they going to be to get that knowledge? What's their education look like?
At the beginning of this program, which is this year, we made a conscious decision to house the hubs at the community colleges. For instance, we've conducted three of those teacher workshops this summer. The first was health sciences. The natural fit for that was Pitt Community College right here in Greenville, since the main hub for ECU Health is here. We also did aviation at Craven Community College at their Havelock campus, since Fleet Readiness Center East is directly across the street from that campus. That organization, which focuses on the MRO for Navy and Air Force aircraft maintenance, repair, and overhaul, and believe it or not, is the largest employer in North Carolina east of I-95. So that seemed like a natural fit. We finished up our summer activities last week at James Sprunt Community College in Kenansville with a smart agriculture workshop. For that workshop, we partnered with a national organization called Nourish the Future to bring about a greater awareness of opportunities for jobs in our region in agriculture.
So I'm hearing that there's different sets of actors involved in this. It seems like the community colleges are sort of hosting teachers. And then you have the school districts, which are putting forward teachers to go learn about the industries and the jobs. And then you have the students. How did the idea come about for the involvement of the community colleges and the teachers? Because this sounds like a pretty novel idea.
We sort of have an inside joke at STEM East that the kindergarten teachers are economic developers. It started as a joke, but then we seriously thought about that. While their primary function is to teach kids how to read, how to write, how to do math, there's also room in there for them to start making kids aware of career opportunities. It sort of grew from that. I get a little bit of history lesson. Prior to COVID, when STEM East was just the original 12 counties, we had something called the Eastern North Carolina Employer and Superintendent Council. The 10 or 12 largest employers sat at the table with superintendents, and we talked about issues with the workforce and how schools could try to address some of those issues. The community colleges, however, were not at the table at that point in time, And we felt like the community colleges were in the best position to deal with some of those workforce issues. They can create and execute training programs much more nimbly than four-year degree programs.
When you first brought this idea up to the school districts and to the community colleges, were folks excited about that? Were the presidents, the superintendents eager to get on board?
Yes, they absolutely were. All of the superintendents in our region recognized the need to keep as many of our best and brightest in the region as we possibly can. So it wasn't as hard a sell for superintendents because I interact with them and they trust me. For those that don't know my background, I retired after serving Greene County Schools for 29 years, the last 14 as superintendent. And so having been around for quite a while as a superintendent, I know most of the superintendents. It was more difficult with community college presidents because outside of Dr. Rusty Hunt, the president of Lenore Community College, I did not get a chance to interact with them in the same way that I interacted with the superintendents in the region. But I leaned on the superintendents to help me recruit their community college presidents. Our first effort in the fall was to secure just letters of support, non-binding letters of support from each of the school districts and community colleges in our region. There are 31 school districts in the 29 counties and there are 16 community colleges. And we secured letters of support from 29 school districts and from 14 community colleges.
In addition to the community support that you received, can you talk a little bit about where the financial support came from?
In January, we had a Vision 2023 event at the Hart Institute at East Carolina University and got everybody really excited. It was attended not only by superintendents and the community college presidents, but by industry leaders, legislators, and other folks in key supporting educational entities and nonprofits like the North Carolina Science, Mathematics, and Technology Education Center. We didn't have any money to operate. So after that January meeting, we asked each school district to contribute $1 per student in K-12. So if your district had 3,000 kids, it was $3,000. In talking with some community college presidents with whom I had a relationship, we determined that $2 per curriculum student would be the best entry fee, if you will, for the community colleges. That generated about $200,000 for us. We had a $75,000 planning grant that we got from the Bell Jar Foundation, the NCSMT Center that I've referenced earlier. Helped us with some programming dollars while we were looking for some other funding. In June, we found out that Bell Jar Foundation had awarded us $1.6 million to be spent over 4 years at $400,000 a year, which was a tremendous help. We have also asked our legislators to get us some money in the state budget. We will not stop there. We're looking at some NSF grants that we might be able to write. We're also studying some other private philanthropies that might be a good fit to see if we can chase down some additional dollars to support the work that we're hoping to do.
This Bell Jar Foundation, from what I understand, it's in San Francisco, right?
Yes.
How did that relationship develop? How are you thinking about your funding search as this progressed?
The easiest thing to do or the lowest hanging fruit is to leverage the relationships with philanthropy that you already have. And Van Rogerson, the CEO of NC East Alliance, already had a relationship with Greg Payne, who was a board member for Bell Jar Foundation, and he happens to live in Alamance County. Even though they're based in California, the bulk of their work has been in northeastern North Carolina and West Virginia. We leveraged that relationship with Greg Payne, and we went and met with him and pitched the idea to him. He liked the idea. He liked the variety of team members. What we ended up getting is the largest grant that they've ever given out. Once you get some funding, it gives confidence maybe to other funders. So we're hoping that that's the tipping point for us being awarded more money, but it is hard to find, and you have to be patient.
Do you see a pathway for sort of permanent funding for this?
Our hope is, again, that we receive funding from the state legislature in this biennial budget, which would give us 2 years of funding. Then we would have enough positive results. We would get the R beside our line in the budget, which means recurring, which pretty much say we would be taken care of in the future.
So when you say positive results, that raises the question of how do you measure success?
Well, for right now, the only things that we've been able to do is host those three teacher workshops. We have done technical assistance workshops for those schools in our region that are looking to earn the designation of STEM School of Distinction by the State Board of Education. That program has been in existence 8 or 9 years, and it is extremely rigorous. There are only about 40 or 41 schools in the state that have earned that. One of our goals is to have our 29-county region have the densest concentration of STEM schools of distinction in our region. We feel like that would be a very positive calling card to help us recruit industries.
You obviously learned some things this year. What were some of the takeaways from your first year, lessons learned?
I would say we learned that our theory that teachers were not aware of all the possibilities for employment in our region were absolutely correct. As a superintendent, I had no idea what went on in a Fleet Readiness Center or a Thermo Fisher or Hyster Yale or whatever the entity may be.
Or even what those things are.
Yes. And I drive by them constantly. We're even more determined now than ever before that we're on to something here. We will be successful. I think it's an 8 to 10 year long-term plan, but I think we can begin to see immediate results. We do ask the teachers to do a survey at the end. We put a QR code up and they give us feedback, and it has been overwhelmingly positive. And there's still more pieces of the puzzle that we want to put out and do, but again, we need funding, and that funding will help us hire more people so we have capacity to do the things.
Thank you for listening to this installment of the Richmond Feds Rural Spotlight Series. To learn more about this story and what's happening in other rural communities throughout the 5th District, visit richmondfed.org/topics/rural_spotlights. Talk to you next time.